What's up, everybody? This is Noah Daniels. Welcome to a very special spooky episode of the Real Hauntings podcast.
Ooh, spooky.
I'm so excited.
I'm JJ.
I'm Kat.
And we're here tonight. We're going to bring you some scary stories.
Ooh.
So you guys getting into the Halloween spirit? Are you guys ready?
You know...
It doesn't sound like it.
Well, I dressed up as Edgar Allan Poe for a thing, but I don't really have a costume yet. I did buy elf ears when I went to Scotland.
Did you go to Scotland?
I went to Scotland recently, you guys.
God. Like elf ears like Dobby or elf ears like Santa Claus?
No, like Dobby, for sure. Okay. We were on the street that Diagon Alley from Harry Potter is supposed to be based off of. In fact, if you typed Diagon Alley into your Google Maps, it would take you to Victoria Street in Edinburgh.
Is Santa Claus an elf?
Oh, yeah, is
he? Does he just employ elves?
He's kind of like Willy Wonka.
I think he does say a jolly big elf in that book.
Is that a real thing, or did you make that up?
In The Night Before Christmas and all. The original one. Mm. He was a jolly good elf.
Oh, yeah. That's like the Lord's Prayer for Santa. Are elves green? For some reason, I picture them being green.
Mm, no. What kind of elves have you been researching?
Maybe just because the movie Elf, he's always wearing green.
Well,
really,
I will say...
not a Lord of the Rings fan.
So we were... Oh, they're so pretty in Lord of the Rings.
The elves are the prettiest species in Lord of the Rings.
Yeah.
Although Dobby is a lot more loyal, so it'd probably be better to date Dobby than one of those elves from Lord of the Rings.
Shout out to Liv Tyler, though. Well, yeah, and Orlando Bloom and the other ones, but mainly those two.
They're pretty.
Anyway, so on Diagon Alley, we were going into, there's like a joke shop there that, you know, there's one in Diagon Alley. So we had to go into the joke shop. It was a Halloween costume kind of store. And one year, like 4 years ago, I was a drunk elf for Halloween. That was my cop out. I just like glued ears to my ears and just got drunk. Sorry, Mom, for listening. Anyway, so I saw them at the store and they just go on your ears. They just clip around your ears. There's no need for glue or tape. And I was like, I have to get these.
Well, I expect because to see them on Halloween night.
Yeah, for sure. So maybe I'll just be an elf again.
Yeah. I'm going to definitely, I decided to go as Guy Fieri.
Mm. Oh, nice.
I think that'll be a fun, easy.
Yeah.
Add a little spice to everybody's life. JJ, what about you? Are you got any costumes you're going to wear for Halloween?
No, I don't have. I need to find a costume. So if you are a listener and you have ideas for last minute costumes.
On Halloween day, you're listening to the.
Can you go back? Oh, yeah. It's Halloween day. That's the best time to make your Halloween costume. Also, JJ just said costumes. Mm. So if
those
listeners,
are the best.
If anyone out there says costume instead of costume, please stop listening to our podcast.
Oh, JJ, I have a suggestion I think would look great.
Yeah.
Can you go as Mo from The Office?
Mo from The Office?
It's Dwight's
brother.
Oh, Moe's.
Moe's, that's right. Yeah. Welcome to Moe's. Yeah.
Wait, wasn't it Moses or no?
Nope, it was Moe's.
Oh, different story.
Maybe it's short for Moses. I don't know.
I think your beard would work really well for that character.
For our listeners, I have a beard.
That sounded really sexy. For our late night listeners, JJ has a beard.
Maybe there's a couple costume in the
I didn't know. I thought you were going to make a beard joke. I was like, where is this going?
Oh, you don't know my beard growing habits.
I don't. That's fair. All right. Well, now that we've talked a little Halloween goodness, who wants to go first on their spooky story?
Ooh.
I'll go. This is a little different from our regular episode. Instead of interviewing a guest about their direct encounters with the supernatural, we're just talking about some of our favorite paranormal stories that we've heard. Mine has a little bit of a direct connection to myself, but not really in an exciting way. So get ready for a boring story.
Exciting, guys. Bells and whistles.
Just kidding. I'll try to keep it exciting. Okay,
that wasn't a bell or a whistle, what you just did.
You don't know my bells and whistles.
Oh, I do. You just did it.
So my story is about an allegedly haunted place outside of London called Chislehurst Caves. Ooh. The reason I learned about Chislehurst Caves is I have a cousin who used to live in London, and my brother and I visited her one summer. She and her husband took us to these caves for a cave tour. It was really cool. And so we got to learn a little bit about some of the ghost sightings that had happened there. But for some quick history, so Chislehurst Caves is about, there's about 20 miles of tunnels underground. So these are big caves. They're not naturally occurring. They're man-made. And we were told by the tour guide that they were originally excavated by druids as like part of their like religious ceremonies. They would have them underground, maybe some human sacrifice, who knows. Now, I did some research in preparation for this. Yeah.
Are druids the ones that don't believe in electricity and like baked pies?
Druids were like the ancient...
Are they robots?
They are a priest in the Anglo-Saxon days before before England was a Christian place. Oh, anyway, so so I was told that it was excavated by druids for religious stuff. And then later on, the Roman Empire built into it further for other things. I don't know. That all apparently is not true or is questionable. Mm. That was something that the person who owned the caves just kind of put out into the universe as a way to attract some more tourists. The caves were initially built in the mid-1200s as a chalk and flint mine. Really interesting, during World War II, because the Germans were bombing the shit out of England, they used to use the caves as an underground shelter for people. And as many as 15,000 people would go under the caves during these bombing raids. And they even have like a little stage set up in the caves where like they would have little shows for the kids to kind of distract them from the fact that they were living in a war zone. And after World War II, a lot of famous musicians and bands like Jimi Hendrix and the Rolling Stones would do concerts down there in that cave, which is super cool. But anyways, there have been a lot of supposed ghost sightings or hearings. Apparently it's common for people to hear the sounds of children laughing. So perhaps those children who were enjoying a nice play while they were hiding from bombs. There's also been stories of children crying. There's apparently some horse stables near the entrance of the cave where the stables collapsed and fell into the caves and the horses died. And there's one night of the year where allegedly you can see riders on these horses riding around town. And I couldn't find what the day of the year was in my research, but there's one day of the year. And apparently this is like such a prevalent a story that people who live there will leave during that day of the year because they don't want to mess with that shit.
So people in the town will leave the town because...
They're like, they plan their vacations around that, the ghost horse riding.
It can't be good for like real estate. Value.
Well, but you know, if the ghosts are predictable and like consistent, then you know, you can easily work around that. It's a good excuse to go on a vacation.
Ghosts are known to be reliable and consistent.
Yeah.
Are they?
Yeah,
okay.
Sure.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Great.
Wow, the skeptic comes out during the story.
Great, great, cool.
But the most famous ghost is the Lady in White. And there's an area in the caves underground where there's a little pool that collects. And it's called the Haunted Pool. Apparently, skeleton of some lady was found in this pool. People believe that it was one of the miners that he had murdered his wife and then took her body down there to hide her body so he wouldn't get in trouble. And she, people have said that they have seen this lady floating around the pool. Our tour guide told us that if anyone who touches or disturbs the water in any way would be haunted by the Lady in White.
Did you touch it?
Of course I touched it. Okay. Yeah. So naturally, my brother, who is even more of a skeptic than I am, we both looked at each other after hearing this and then just splashed the water.
What if it was true and you were haunted by the lady in white?
Well, I was not haunted and thus cemented my skepticism in ghosts because I was not visited by a ghostly lady.
Didn't they write a song about her? Like, Lady in White?
That's the Lady in Red.
Oh.
Okay. Lady in Red. Wait, am I wrong? Mm. Her name was Lola. That's a different one. She did the cha-cha. We have heard a couple, like, ladies in white.
Well, I feel like white's a good color for ghosts. So white or gray. Maybe red if it's, like, a real scary bloody ghost. And they had a challenge. They used to have a challenge in this cave for anyone who could spend 24 hours in the cave alone. And there would be like a cash prize and, you know, glory and
a t-shirt.
Only one person has ever successfully completed the challenge.
Oh, wow.
And that person has said that he would never do it again, no matter how much money was rewarded. And the last person to have done the challenge was in 1986. Mm. And the people outside of the cave heard him screaming. They went down to the cave to find him. And they found him on the floor convulsing, like he was having a seizure, foaming at the mouth. He had never had any seizures, any form of epilepsy or anything before then. So they took him out. And they no longer allow that challenge.
Oh, they ended the competition.
Yeah, they ended it there. Now, granted, granite cave.
God damn it.
Oh, wow. Wow.
These caves are in pitch black, right? Which is not a setting that humans are accustomed to being in. I have a feeling that your mind might do some really crazy stuff being in pitch black for a while. There was one part during the tour of the cave where we had to turn all of our lanterns off and just experience the pitch black for a while. And it was really strange and disorienting. I don't know if any of you have ever been in a completely pitch black environment, but it's freaky. And I can't imagine, you know, we only did it for like a minute or two. So trying to spend an entire night in that kind of situation, I feel like you're really making yourself more susceptible to being tricked by your brain.
It's funny you said that because last night I went from my bedroom to my office to get something and it was really late. And I was like, you know what? I'm not going to turn on any light and I'm just going to see if things feel spooky just because of the environment, not because there is something spooky in the house. And it was fucking scary.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Like I walked into the side wall because I couldn't see it.
Uh-huh.
And then I had to start feeling things around and I thought I found the office. And then I walked into the closet door and that was scary. And then I finally made it into the office and it was such a relief. And I was like,
I'm proud of you.
It just makes me wonder like how many spooky things are just because people are afraid of the dark. Because I was legitimately scared just because it was dark and I would see like little flashes of light bleeding in from outside and stuff. And I was like, well, you can kind of see how somebody could have a fast experience and just give that over to it being a paranormal experience.
For sure.
Yeah.
Well, and what was the name of that area, JJ?
The caves were called Chislehurst Caves.
Okay.
I once did, there was an exhibit in Atlanta, the Bodies exhibit, and attached to it was Dialogue in the Dark for just a little bit of time. Actually, it was there for a couple of years. And it's basically you go and get to just experience what it's like to be blind. And they take you into a room and your tour guides are also blind. And you get a walking stick and you go through these rooms where like the lights are slowly dimmed to the point where they're all out at the end. And your brain definitely will start showing you different colors or different things that you think are lights. Phantom vision is a definite thing that happens with people that maybe had vision and then had an experience where they were now blind. My friend's grandfather was like completely blind and would have dreams or just he would be awake and would just suddenly be like in a barn.
Oh, fascinating.
His brain would just like
like a phantom limb.
That vision. Yeah.
Gosh, that seems horrifying.
Which makes me think if you're in pitch black dark, I don't know what your brain's going to show you, but maybe it's the lady in white.
Yeah.
That's really interesting. Well, JJ, thanks for sharing that. That was a lot of fun. I haven't been in many caves. I know people will do like cave exploring. That's a thing, you know, where they'll go in and I think I'm slightly claustrophobic. And that's always kind of prevented me from volunteering, putting myself in those situations. But kudos to you for checking that out. That sounds pretty crazy.
I'm super into cave tours.
Really?
I mean, I haven't done a lot. It sounds like I've done a ton. But like I've done like 3 cave tours in my life. And all of them were amazing experiences. And
is this the kind where you like have a helmet on?
No, it wasn't like that intense. You just kind of walk through caves and like a tour guide. I'm not spelunking or anything like that. But there was one where there was like a gap between the cave floor and the cave ceiling that was like 1 foot high. And we had to like crawl on our stomachs and get
that stuff. Now, the cave tours, I went to Aruba once and we did a cave tour. They had a couple ones there. But I have been like caving, like, or spelunking, I guess. And I was so claustrophobic. Like, I hated it, which stinks because it was an okay experience. Yeah. But, you know, a lot of people really love it. But I just like needed to feel the fresh air.
Spelunking sounds like it would be a really hard stain to get out of your shirt.
Oh, yeah? Great. Noah with the jokes.
All right. Well, JJ, thanks for sharing that. And Kat, did you want to go next?
Yeah, let's do it. So I'm going to mix it up and I'm going to do an alien abduction story.
Yes.
So get excited. Still creepy, still spooky.
Some X-Files.
Based on a true story. I wanted to figure out the best way to tell this story. Instead of taking notes, I just figured I'd find someone that had already typed it up nicely for me. And I'm going to be reading the words from Les Hewitt from Paranorms.com. The Unresolved podcast did an episode on this. So
awesome.
If you want to check that out, I bet they did a great job too. On September 19th, 1961, a reported event occurred on the back roads of New Hampshire that single-handedly rewrote what experts believed about UFO encounters. So until this time, only a handful of reports of similar nature had surfaced. So this one was really highly publicized at the time and so many details to go through based on this couple's reports. So let's see here. Their names were Betty and Barney Hill.
Aww.
And this is their story. The Hills were a married couple living in Portsmouth, New Hampshire with their pet dog, Delcy. What a great name, Delcy. Betty was a social worker, and Barney worked for the post office. They were respected members of their community as members of the NAACP and the Unitarian Church. In fact, the governor had appointed Barney to serve on the state civil rights committee. So, after a short vacation to Niagara Falls, they were driving home on Highway 3 through the White Mountains. So, shout out to our people that live near Niagara Falls and know Highway 3. Betty sat in the passenger seat and was idly gazing out of the window when she noticed a bright light that she initially thought was a star. It seemed to be following them, but it was moving erratically. The couple had a brief conversation about it. Barney initially assumed that it was just an ordinary aircraft, but Betty suggested they pull over so they could get a better look and also to give Delcy a pit stop because dogs have to pee, right? Barney stopped the car and got out his binoculars. Betty looked first. She knew it wasn't a star when she saw a spinning craft with an odd shape and flashing lights of different colors. Barney took his turn to look through the binoculars. Although he had presumed it must be an airplane, he saw it rapidly descend and move in their direction. Too quick to be a plane. He rushed back to the car and continued to drive toward, Franconia Notch.
Say that again?
Franconia Notch.
If you are from Franconia Notch and you're appalled by the pronunciation, please email us with a phonetic pronunciation of your area. Is it a town?
You know, I couldn't tell you.
Let us know that too. realhauntingspodcast@gmail.com.
So they decided to get in the car and continue that drive. And Betty watched the craft as it got closer and closer until it was right over them, forcing them to stop the car in the middle of the road. Barney did not know what they were looking at, but it was huge and silent. It hovered about 100 feet above them. He grabbed his pistol and the binoculars. First off, very prepared. Pistol and binoculars in his car.
Ready to go.
And they went out to investigate. Barney saw windows across a pancake-shaped object. As he moved toward it, he saw something else that made him turn and run back to the car. Inside, there were up to 11 beings that didn't quite look human. They were staring at him through the windows. Now, this is all on recording of Barney giving this synopsis of their experience. Barney hysterically ran back to the car, drove away as fast as he could, but the hills were suddenly overcome by buzzing and tingling throughout their bodies. This was when things became very cloudy for them. When they regained full consciousness, they were once again experiencing the tingling, and they were 35 miles further down the road without a clear memory of how they got there. And so, you know, the first thing that they, when obviously when they're telling the story to people, they're like, we don't believe you at all. So the first thing that they're saying is like, well, there's 35 minutes. We're like, or however long time that we just don't remember anything. Yeah. Anyway, so when they arrived home around dawn, they both felt strange. They knew they had seen something. They couldn't really remember what happened. They still felt the buzzing sensations. And this little excerpt says, both Betty and Barney had physical changes from the night before, including Betty's torn and stained dress, Barney's scraped shoe, and a broken binocular strap. But neither of them had any memories of these things that had happened. Each of them also owned a watch. And after the previous night's events, neither watch ever worked again. Attention quickly turned to the car. On the back of the vehicle, shiny circles of a concentric nature were discovered. A compass? What would you say?
I say compost.
What was the word, compass?
Compass.
Like what, a thing you use to find the direction? A compass.
Okay, costume.
I can't wait to see your Halloween costume.
Okay, but neither of them had any memories of these things having happened. Each also owned a watch, and after the previous night's events, neither watch ever worked again. Attention quickly turned to the car. On the back of the vehicle, shiny circles of a concentric nature were discovered. A compass placed near the circles indicated that the circles were magnetized. Betty confided in her sister, who strongly advised that she get in touch with the local Air Force base, because that's really easy to do. Get in touch with your local Air Force base, right?
Yeah, it's just 912. Sure.
To report the incident. Of course, this, what, when did I say this was? In
61?
Yep, 1961. Wow. So it was probably.
Still trapped.
Yeah. so Barney was more concerned with being labeled eccentric, but allowed his wife to get in touch.
That was
with.
Kind of
a... Yeah. Thank you, Barney, for allowing your wife to do something. At the time, she made her first report. Okay, so 5 days later, Major Paul Henderson visits the hills at their home and completed an official inquiry. So this is a report by the NICAP.
Okay.
Which is the National Investigations Committee on Aerial Phenomena. Mm-hmm. 10 days after the encounter, Betty began to have vivid dreams about the strange event. So memories started kind of coming back in the form of a dream. 5 nights in a row, her dreams contained small men in uniforms who forced the hills into a strange craft and subjected them to examinations. She wrote this down in her dream journal. Betty went to the library, found a book on UFO phenomenon, and she contacted directly the author of it. And their investigation began about a month after the sighting. Both the hills were interviewed at length by NICAP officials. And they both admitted to seeing the same thing, a large disc that was silent. The people that Barney said he saw were somehow not human. So the couple, they tried to put the whole episode behind them, but they were being affected in different ways. Barney grew more and more stressed and anxious as time went on. Outsiders assumed that this was due to their interracial marriage, an uncommon occurrence during this generation.
Wait, time out.
What? They were abducted by aliens because of their interracial marriage?
No. So,
those aliens are not woke
at all.
So other articles I read said that at first Barney didn't want to draw attention because at the time they already had a lot of attention being because an interracial couple. So he was already stressed and anxious. And so they just assumed that was because of that.
Yeah.
Some criticized the pair based solely on their union. None of this helped either spouse, and things got so bad for Barney. He was forced to take time off work in order to try and recover. Things weren't great for Betty. She turned her attention toward trying to find out as much as she could about their perceived encounter. And then Barney started seeing a therapist, etc. So
it's very progressive of Barney in 1961.
Well, they had these feelings that something happened and they couldn't quite piece it together. Imagine just like well, not remembering a part of your life, but then again, binge drinking. What's that?
That was dark.
Okay.
Sorry, Catherine's mom. No!
I didn't. Okay. So a speaker at their church gave a talk about, you know, his poetry, and then Betty and Barney attended and listened to it, and they talked to him about it. And he told them, this is the guy that was talking about his poetry, he said he dabbles in hypnotherapy. So at the end of the talk, Betty and Barney asked him if he thought hypnotherapy might be able to help them remember some things that they forgot. They also asked for his help, but he declined because he didn't feel that he was qualified. Instead, he recommended they ask Barney's therapist for a referral to a legit hypnotherapist, mm-hmm. I suppose. Have either of you been hypnotized before?
No. I've never had somebody diddle in hypnotherapy on me.
I've seen it, but it's
You've
never...
seen hypnotherapy?
I've seen hypnosis, like, where the guy comes. After 6 months of starting hypnosis, the doctor, his name's Dr. Benjamin Simon, he started using hypnotic regression. So during the first sessions, Dr. Simon concluded by inducing amnesia to each partner in order to reduce the possibility of potential collusion out of the session. So if neither was able to remember what happened, then there was less chance of them discussing matters among themselves. In his sessions, Barney had many new recollections, such as meeting an Irishman that had red hair. There were also beings there that didn't seem to be human. All of these individuals were dressed in similar looking uniforms. Each had a peaked cap and silver piping on the uniform itself that reminded Barney of Nazi uniforms.
Show JJ those pictures on your laptop.
Yeah. So according to his own memories during hypnosis, Barney said the crew spoke a language he could not understand and also English, but they weren't using their mouths. Barney said they appeared to use thought transference.
Ah.
Dude, those pictures are straight up Voldemort.
Yeah, I was thinking the exact same thing. It looks like a little preteen Voldemort.
Preteen Voldemort.
That was Tom Riddle. Does he not even know?
But Tom Riddle had a nose.
Yeah. So, but no, I understand. We'll post these pictures for you guys. Betty reported similar events during her hypnotic session separately from her husband. Both revealed that they underwent medical exams during which the beings took numerous samples that included blood, bodily fluids, and hair. Betty also stated that as part of her exam, skin samples were taken. Much of what Betty had mentioned during her sessions were things that she had already written in her journal. It did say her dress was ripped.
That's not very nice.
You guys are like, cool. Okay, and then they found out something took place on board the craft that only Betty noted. She indicated that the aliens showed her a map of where they came from, which she drew during one of her sessions. Some people believe this could be the location of the home world. Additionally, Betty had indicated that the beings showed her trade routes that they used frequently, routes they didn't take often, and those that they took for expeditions.
It's very odd.
Yeah. I mean, it's super detailed. Where is she pulling this stuff
Excuse
from?
Me, ma'am, as we take your skin cells and talk to you through our mind holes.
Wait, do your alien voice.
We want to share with you our trade routes. These are less free. I'd be like, what?
Yeah,
no.
Like, why would they show her a map?
Give me the secret of life.
If this is like your secret, like as an alien, if like your job is to go abduct people to test them and put them back, why would you tell them your life story? Unless they're lonely and bored.
It's these lonely like, out in space.
This is like the reject quote, aliens that have no friends and they come down and fraternize with.
These guys kind of sound like the Ferengi from Star Trek The Next Generation. Yeah. Just like really annoying, only care about their little trade routes.
Well, here's the cool part is that this map was evidence for some people. Because sometime around 1970, a teacher from Ohio made a match to the Zeta Reticuli star system. Is that something I should know?
Sure, yeah.
Is that our star system? It looked just like the map Betty drew and also included our own sun. That's not our galaxy.
JJ's what's the difference between a star system and a galaxy? Like a star system to me is like the solar system, which is part of the Milky Way galaxy.
So basically she drew this map. And then in 1970, this other map of this star system was created and it matches hers almost perfectly, which proves that their experience was genuine to some people. That's about it. They did keep quiet for a while. And then towards the end of 1965, they got real famous. They wrote a book and there's a plaque where it happened, a historical marker in New Hampshire commemorating the 50th anniversary of Betty and Barney Hill's encounter.
Wow, that plaque looks really official, too.
Yeah.
So are they still alive?
Mm-hmm.
Really? Can we get them on the podcast?
Right. Oh, well...
It was 61 when they were abducted.
Do we need to find a medium to get...
So their experience turned into the most well-known of all UFO reports and would set the stage for many others like it. As the 1960s progressed, Barney's health began to worsen. In February 1969, he died of a cerebral hemorrhage. Betty never remarried after his death and went on to become something of a UFO celebrity until her own death in 2004.
So he didn't live much longer after that.
Yeah.
Well, maybe they came and took him home.
Do y'all believe in UFOs and aliens? Is that, or are you UFO alien skeptics? And I guess we should probably differentiate between UFOs and aliens, because a UFO could literally be anything flying around. It doesn't have to be from outer.
So let's take it from the alien spectrum. That scares me a lot more than ghosts. The idea of like some higher being flying around in a spaceship.
Oh, I'm way more scared of there not being aliens.
Really?
Than ghosts. I mean, and not to say that like, I'm skeptical of people who've claimed that aliens have visited this planet, but for the entire universe to not have any life other than humans, that's
weird. It seems
weird.
Really small-minded to think that we're the only intellectual creatures in the universe.
Yeah, there's too many coincidences between, like, just the ages and everything.
Yeah. Well, and there's and there's so many other planets that people keep finding that they're like, ooh, this is a proto-Earth. Planets that have similar environments.
They're just so far away. Yeah, it's interesting. I don't know. I think if I could pick to meet a ghost or an alien, I would pick a ghost. Because I feel like if aliens come down, we're going to be their dolphins. And have you seen how we treat dolphins in this world?
That's a good
point. I mean, the alien in this story was clearly just trying to make conversation. And then
as he took samples against their consent. Or she. I don't know the sex of the alien.
I would much rather meet an alien. And I'm going on board that ship. And
JJ's like already giving skin samples through the doorway.
I'm going wherever they take me, and I'm gonna let them probe me as much as they want.
Oh God!
I just want to go to outer space.
Well,
so if you're an alien listening to this podcast,
come and take JJ, please.
Email us at realhauntingspodcast@gmail.com, and I will send you my coordinates. And you can just beam me up, and anyone who wants to come along.
Oh, man. All right. Well, on that note, we're going to shift gears, and we'll get to my story. So, all you real haunters out there, I want you to turn the volume up. Get ready, because things are going to get scary. So, yeah, this story, I did some research, and once I started reading about, we'll call her the protagonist of the story, I kind of got obsessed because I had never heard the story before. Mm-hmm. She's probably been on other podcasts, but I don't remember hearing about it. This is the story of Lavinia Fisher and her husband, John Fisher. And Lavinia is a ghost that haunts a jail in Charleston, South Carolina. Which we all know Charleston is like one of the alleged most haunted towns in America. So some believe that she was the first female serial killer in America.
Equality. She's a trailblazer. Oh,
she really was. So she lived from 1793 to 1820. So this is back when the primary mode of transportation was horse. Something that was interesting about her, so not only was she an alleged serial killer, she was a confirmed gang member in a gang of highwaymen. So for you that are not familiar with highwaymen, they ride horses, rob people, and fuck them up. That's my understanding of a highwayman.
How do you fuck them up?
I kill them, beat them, take their stuff. Okay. I mean, we've all heard that Johnny Cash, Willie Nelson, highwaymen song, right?
Yeah.
Wait, can you sing it real quick?
The highwaymen. That's all I got.
So informational.
So, so she was a confirmed gang member of a highwayman, which was kind of cool because there weren't a lot of women who were highwaymen, hence the name highwaymen. It wasn't very, wasn't a lot of equality in the
1700s. Not an inclusive workplace.
No. Well, even the word woman, it's kind of like, not a man. Let's say woman.
Whoa, man. So something that's interesting about her and her husband, they owned a house or a hotel in Charleston. It was called the 6 Mile Wafer House, and it was next to the 5 Mile Wafer House. So what she allegedly did, because I don't know her, this was a long time ago, but supposedly she would invite guests in to the hotel. They would come in for refuge. She would get them some tea, mix a little poison in with their tea.
Hell yeah.
Interrogate them, see what belongings they had with them. They would die. Her husband and her would drag their corpses out of the back of the hotel and dump them. So the town folk started to catch on that the guests would just disappear. They would enter and then they would never see them again. So they would go to the sheriff and say, hey, you know, the Fishers are up to some funny business in there. Go check it out. But the Fishers were so beloved in that community because there were so many gang members and roughnecks that lived there. The sheriff never took it serious or just didn't want to waste his time getting in the middle of whatever nefarious actions they had going on. So the other legend about her and how she would murder people, she would take them to their hotel room. They would get settled in, be in their bed, fast asleep. And then she had a lever that she would pull. The bed would split in two and drop them down into like a cavern that had spikes that would kill them.
Dude. Okay.
Is that a confirmed story? Did they find this spiked cavern?
It's part of the legend.
Part of the legend.
So yeah, so it's pretty wild. That to me was like one of those like, wait, what
kind of moments?
You know? Yeah, dropped them right in the spikes. So everything came to a head when a traveler by the name of John Peoples found himself in the Wafer House. He was offered tea by Lavinia, but lucky for him, he didn't like tea much and dumped it out when she wasn't looking. After being interrogated by her, he was escorted to his room and he was feeling, you know, kind of unsettled by her and her presence. So he refused to sleep in the bed. So he slept in a wooden chair next to the bed. Nice. During the night, his bed folded together, revealing a pit that would have led to his death. He jumped out of the window of the room, jumped onto his horse, and rode back into Charleston to alert the police. So he goes and alerts the police. They show back up to confront Lavinia and her husband, John. The whole gang comes out of highwaymen, and they're getting ready to have a shootout with the police. John, being the romantic that he is, turns everybody in because he doesn't want his wife to get shot in the altercation.
Oh, John, such a romantic.
So back then, they would sometimes put people like John and Lavinia in the same jail cell. So they kept them in holding during their trial. The judge found them guilty of highway robbery, which was a capital offense and carried the death penalty. So he ordered them to the gallows to be hung.
But they weren't found guilty of murder?
No, they couldn't prove any murder. All they had was the dude's story. And then some of the past actions of robbery from being a highwayman. But I think because being a highwayman carried such nefarious actions that they would punish people with death back then for that. Which is kind of wild to me. The judge ordered them to be hung, but they announced that they wanted to file an appeal. So he granted the appeal. So while he granted their ability to file an appeal. So during this time, while the appeal was going on, they were in this jail cell in Charleston, South Carolina. The jail cell was 6 by 8 feet, and it wasn't very secure. So they got the idea, we're just going to break out of this jail. We're highwaymen. We're gone, you know? So they tie linens and, like, start climbing out of the jail cell. And John is going first, being a gentleman, I guess.
Romantic.
Romantic.
Yeah.
And the linens break. So he falls down, and he's free. She's stuck in jail. But he loves her so much that he allows himself to get captured so he can go back into jail with her. So they lose.
Stupid.
It's romantic.
Is it?
So they lose the appeal. The order to be hung is upheld. So this is where things get really interesting. So John, meanwhile, he converts to Christianity. He starts seeing a priest. He renounces his actions in front of a congregation. He's still going to be hung to death, but at least he, you know, believes that he's going to go to heaven after he's hung. So he kind of feels that, you know, presumably at peace with what's going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Lavinia is a gangster. She, not only does she not go to any religion, she requests that she be hung in her wedding dress.
Hell yeah.
So when they are on their way to the gallows, John calmly walks up goes up to the noose, escorted by the guards. Lavinia goes kicking and screaming. They have to carry her to the gallows. So she's standing there, noose in front, and she's cursing people out, and it comes to a moment where she's going to be hung. So what does she do? She looks out to the crowd and she says, "If you have a message for the devil, tell me now, because I'm about to see him." Puts the noose around her own neck and jumps off the platform.
What a badass.
Damn, Lavinia? Lavinia?
Lavinia, I think.
Avril Lavigne?
Avril Lavigne. This is the story of Avril Lavigne. Yeah, like that's the most gangster shit I've heard from the 1700s. Like, this lady did not care. She was going out on her own terms. Don't get me wrong, she's a bad human being, but a pretty damn cool
story.
She's
OG.
Yeah, OG as fuck.
As what?
Fuck, I got really insecure about saying that.
Noah, we just want you to know you can feel comfortable cussing on this
podcast. Oh, thanks, guys.
Yeah, we're here for you.
Thank you. You guys are here for me, and I appreciate that. So she dies. Now we get to the haunting, right? You got to have a death to get some ghost. Mm-hmm. Almost immediately following her death, locals begin to report seeing her face floating behind the bars of the windows where her and John were held. Reports of strange occurrences were reported in the year 2000 when renovation and restoration efforts were being made to the jail because there was an earthquake at some point that really damaged the jail. One of the first reports was workers finding footprints in the dust after the building had been locked off for months due to lead paint contamination. More and more paranormal activity occurred as preservation efforts continued, and the building was then they decided just to open the building for tourism because there were so many ghost instances and people were getting really curious about what's going on in this building. Several of the people who have visited the historic building often claim to have seen a woman in her wedding dress, describe it as being bright red and white.
Probably from the blood from the hanging.
I imagine. If she went out that gangster, there probably had to be some blood involved.
You bleed from hanging, right? Or maybe not.
I don't think so.
I've never done it. That's not my kink.
You've never done it?
No.
Oh, you should try. Listeners, don't try.
Oh, dear.
Oh, my gosh. Let's see. So people start going on these tours, right? These ghost tours. They're getting to see the jail. And visitors and employees alike have complained of a choking sensation and feeling shortness of breath once they reach the main staircase.
Wow.
Others reported being grabbed, pushed, touched, and scratched by unseen forces. A tour guide tells a story of feeling a rope wrap around her ankle, and a man in the basement had his sunglasses knocked off by a violent unseen force. Other strange happenings also allegedly occur, such as the terrible odors that are so bad that make people feel ill and they have to run out of the jail. And others report feeling extreme coldness, even though the temperatures in the jail are regulated by like an air conditioner and it's warm.
I mean, my office building also has central AC, but I get very cold.
Maybe somebody was hung there in the 1700s. Visitors have also seen their breath come out of their mouth. And, you know, like when it's cold and you see your breath, so that's kind of weird. And doors are often found open after being closed recently. So, yeah, man, that's the freaky story. A Lavinia Fisher.
That is not someone who I would want to have as a ghost.
I'd
want to
be her friend. I mean, not like the murder
stuff.
You want
to be friends with murders?
You want to be her friend, but you don't want to be invited for tea.
Right. Maybe I'm saying I don't want to be on her other side. Maybe I would rather have been like a highwayman.
Listeners, if you are a murderer and you want a friend, please email
Kat.
Real Hot Teens Podcast.
Oh, dear. 555-555-555. Well, guys, that was a lot of fun. I feel like I learned a lot. I feel like I got a little more curious about aliens, and I think I learned about a gangster lady from the 1700s.
Hell yeah.
Real gangster.
So we hope that you all have a very spooky Halloween, and we appreciate you spending a little time with us on Halloween or whenever you do choose to listen to this. And let us know if you want more storytelling. You know, this is something we might do every now and then. We enjoy getting to hang out and share stories with each other, and we want to share that experience with you guys. So with that, I'm Noah Daniels.
I'm JJ Crable.
And I'm Kat.
Ooh.